So Stephen Jay Gould was making an important point about science, that it's based on observation of reality. We have a tendency to interpret that as meaning things that we can see or interact with directly, but as he points out, there are many things that we know are real, according to the principles of science, even if we can't directly see them with our own eyes. Gould puts black holes into this category because we know they exist because all of the evidence tells us so, but we can't really see them until maybe now. So this image came out in April 2019. Many of you have seen it, and it made headlines across the globe for good reason. This is, as the headlines say, the first photograph ever taken of a black hole, specifically the supermassive black hole at the center of the M87 galaxy, which is 50 million light years from Earth. This black hole actually has a name, Povehi, which comes from the Hawaiian creation chant and means the adorned, fathomless, dark creation. This name was granted by Hawaiian cultural and language practitioner Larry Kimura in recognition that the Mauna Kea Observatory participated in the imaging. The image came from the Event Horizon Telescope, which is a collaboration of radio telescopes and researchers across 20 different countries. They've developed techniques for synchronizing their telescopes with incredible precision, which lets them form a virtual larger telescope that can see incredibly far, much farther than any individual one can, including into the core of neighboring galaxies. So for 10 days in early 2017, the Event Horizon telescopes took observations of M87, and then it took 2 years to reconcile all the observations, synchronize them, and process the data. And the results stunned everybody who saw them. Next. This is Dr. Katie Bowman. She was a grad student at the time and now a professor at Caltech, and she was one of the lead developers of the software that was able to stitch that image together. So her reaction is priceless, and her image was just about as popular as the black hole image. So, next slide. So, Gould's quote, is it true or not? We can see black holes, we can photograph them. Or, well, we can and we can't. Because as the video mentioned, black holes are incredibly hard to see because their defining characteristic is that they're so dense that not even light can escape from them. We're able to notice them mostly because they distort the fabric of the universe so significantly that they affect the objects around them in ways that we are able to see. So, what exactly are we seeing in that photograph of M87? Next. So, this photograph matches incredibly well what we would expect to see, which is shown in this visualization that NASA produced. This is a computer simulation of what a black hole might look like. What the red matter is all the accretion disk, all of the material that's being sucked into the black hole. The dark spot in the center is the shadow of the black hole itself, which we can't see. And because the black hole has such a strong gravitational pull, it's actually distorting light around it. So what in reality is a flat disk we see is this. But what exactly is a black hole? Why are they so strange? Why do we care about them so much that we put so much effort into developing entirely new branches of science to look into them? Black holes have been a theoretical concept for about 100 years. It's only in about the past 50 that we started seeing concrete evidence for them in the universe. Actually, the idea of an object so dense that it sucks in even light goes back a long way, but it was a theory of general relativity developed by Albert and Mileva Einstein during the early 1900s that really laid out how and why such an object might exist. Now, I don't fully understand general relativity, but it's actually fairly easy to summarize. The idea is that what we experience as the force of gravity, what holds us to the Earth and holds, you know, hamsters and plants and rocks and trees and holds the solar system together and keeps us orbiting the sun and so on, actually comes from the shape of the underlying universe. The physical universe exists in four dimensions, three dimensions of space, you know, up, down, back, forth, left, right, and one dimension of time, which operates differently. It moves forth at 1 second per second. And what general relativity says is space-time, which is the name for all four dimensions together, it isn't flat and smooth. It curves in response to the matter that's within it. So that's the first part of general relativity. Matter tells space-time how to curve. And the second part is that, in return, space-time then tells matter how to move. So if we take away a couple of those dimensions, a really good analogy of this is, imagine you have a flat rubber sheet, and that's space-time. Or maybe your nice memory foam mattress would also work. And you take a heavy ball, like a bowling ball, and you set it on that sheet, it will form a dimple. That's matter affecting space-time. And if you then roll another ball across the sheet, as it interacts with that dimple, it'll curve towards the first object. So, and if you get it just right, you can get the second object orbiting the first object, and you can get all sorts of, you know, fancy interactions going on. There are some YouTube videos of people doing this with a hula hoop covered with stretchy fabric and getting some pretty fantastic things going. If we figured one video was enough for this. So, but go out and look it up. It's pretty neat. So everything that we experience as gravity comes from this principle. If I take one of our rocks and drop it, it's basically sliding down curved space-time towards the center of the Earth. Next slide. So, and a key idea is that the denser an object is, the steeper the sides of the dimple it makes, the sharper the way that space-time will curve around it. And we know there are several types of super-dense objects out there, but what distinguishes a black hole is that its dimple, as it were, is so steep that even light isn't fast enough to get back out if it falls in. And since we know that light is the fastest thing in the universe, basically nothing can escape a black hole. So it's an object of enormous density that curves space-time so sharply that it pulls everything in, including light, hence the name black hole. It's a trap from which nothing can escape. It's something that's important to note is that just because a black hole is super dense doesn't mean it's super massive or that it's, like the video said, a giant vacuum cleaner that's going to suck in everything around it. Black holes come in a whole range of sizes, and if I had a magic wand and I could wave it and replace our sun with a black hole of the same mass as our sun, which I wouldn't do because I'm not a supervillain. but from the point of view of the orbits of the Earth and everything like that, nothing would change. There's still an object of the same mass at the center of the solar system. What would really mess this up is that we wouldn't have sunlight anymore. But you know, black holes are not, you know, cosmic monsters out to devour everything around them. They just bend space really sharply. And even if that were to happen, you'd have to still get really close to the new black hole that replaced the sun, which would only be a few miles across. You'd have to get really close before any of those real gravitational distortions came into effect. So, next. General relativity implies that black holes are logically possible, which gave Einstein and a whole bunch of other scientists the willies because they are so weird. a lot of astronomers searched for reasons why this couldn't actually happen, but as time went on, scientists started taking them seriously as real objects because, as it turns out, it's not that hard for them to form. When stars at the end of their lives run out of fuel, some of them start to collapse in upon themselves. And if the remaining mass is above a certain amount, then what the math says is that what remains will compress down past the limit where it becomes a black hole. So these are the fun size ones that the video mentioned, fun size black holes. They're stellar black holes because they come from stars. Despite what I was just talking about, and I know some of you are wondering, our sun is not going to do this. It's not big enough. It'll become something called a white dwarf, but it's not going to become a black hole. It would have to be about 5 times bigger in order to hit that limit. So, you know, 5 billion years from now, we don't have to worry about having a black hole in the center of our solar system. But by that time, our galaxy will have collided with the Andromeda galaxy, so we'll have other things to worry about, which is a whole other very interesting topic. So as our telescopes got better, we also started seeing actual signs that there were invisible or at least very small objects having a huge gravitational effect on their surroundings, like the example of stars orbiting nothing. And one of the things that really clinched it is seeing that these invisible objects were emitting radiation, like X-rays. This is an artist's visualization of a black hole, but it really shows some of the radiation forces that come off of it. As the material orbits closer and closer to a black hole's event horizon, it gets really superheated, and it gets so hot and energized that it emits huge quantities of X-rays and other radiation. In the 1970s, astrophysicists realized that the brightest X-ray source in the sky, which was called Cygnus X-1, was a perfect black hole candidate. It's about 6,000 light years from Earth, and it behaves like something that's about 15 times the mass of our sun, but it's invisible. And in fact, a black hole of that size would have an event horizon only 27 miles across. So, you know, Cygnus X-1 is pretty conclusively a black hole. And now that we know what to look for, we're seeing similar evidence all over the place within our galaxy and within other galaxies. But one of the things that's different about this is that this isn't a stellar black hole, this is a supermassive black hole. It is much, much larger. Next slide, please. So this black hole is about 6.5 billion times the mass of our sun. Its event horizon is 40 billion kilometers across. And that little circle in the center is the orbit of Pluto, for comparison. So this is by no means the largest one out there. And there is actually a news article that came out on Friday that scientists have found the largest supermassive black hole yet. It's about 700 million light years away. And it's 10 times larger than this and 10 times further away in the center of a galaxy quite far from us. And we're looking back into time at it and seeing a very active galaxy with a huge black hole in its center. Because the thing is, it seems to be the rule and not the exception that large galaxies have huge black holes like this at their centers. Our Milky Way has one. There's another very bright X-ray source called Sagittarius A that is about at the center of our galaxy that we know is a black hole. You know, that's just a close-up of what the very bright X-ray source looks like at the center of our galaxy. We can see stars orbiting it at a significant percentage of the speed of light, which means they're very close to getting sucked in. And recently, it started flaring, sending out more X-rays, which they think is a sign that it actively ate something, and that more of that matter started. So this is really interesting, and the only reason that the Event Horizon Telescope didn't prioritize this one is because we have to look through our galaxy to see it. So it's a lot closer, but it's a lot harder to see, whereas M87 has a much clearer sight line. So this is one of the big mysteries that teams like the Event Horizon Telescope are trying to answer. Why do supermassive black holes and galaxies go together like chocolate and peanut butter, in my opinion? Why is there some sort of measurable relationship between the speed a galaxy rotates and the size of its central black hole? How do black holes that large even form in the first place? Black holes can merge together. In fact, when that happened, that was the way we were able to detect gravitational waves a couple of years ago, the LIGO experiment. But for something this large to form, it's pretty unlikely that it was just a bunch of individual stellar black holes merging together, especially since so many of these huge black holes are very old and they seem to be related directly to the galaxies that formed around them. So it's very possible that something happened in the early universe to create these supermassive black holes, and that they in turn served as galaxy seeds of some kind. Maybe they're in part responsible for the structure of the visible universe. And if so, it's not too much of a stretch to say that they could bear some responsibility in setting up the conditions that allowed for life to evolve here on our planet and potentially other places in the universe. So this is a very exciting time for astrophysics because we have a lot of unanswered questions. Those are the times that scientists like best. And we have amazing tools with which to answer them. Where will black hole science take us in the next 50 years? I don't know, but just like this, I think it'll be awesome in every conceivable way.
Thank you, Ellen. Wow. I don't think we're moving from the ridiculous to the sublime, but in order to transition between the science and the spirituality of black holes, I would like you to join with me in our responsive reading. It's number 530 in the hymnal, and it's written by Robert Weston. I will be reading the words in the white colored font, and I would like you to respond with those in the yellow. Out of the stars. Out of the stars in their flight, out of the dust of eternity, here have we come. Stardust and sunlight, mingling time through time and through space. Out of the stars have we come. Up from time, out of the stars have we come. Time out of time, before time, in the vastness of space, Earth spun to orbit the sun. Earth with the thunder of mountains newborn, the boiling of seas. Earth warmed by sun, lit by sunlight. This is our home. Out of the stars have we come. Mystery hidden in mystery, back through all time. Mystery rising from rocks in the storm and the sea. Out of the stars, rising from rocks and the sea, kindled by sunlight on earth, arose life. Ponder this thing in your heart. Ponder with awe. Out of the sea to the land, out of the shallows came ferns. Out of the sea to the land, up from darkness to light, rising to walk and to fly, out of the sea trembled life. Ponder this thing in your heart, life up from sea, eyes to behold, throats to sing, mates to love, life from the sea, warmed by the sun, washed by rain, life from within, giving birth, rose to love. This is the wonder of time. This is the marvel of space. Out of the stars swung the earth. Life upon earth rose to love. This is the marvel of life, rising to see and to know. Out of your heart cry wonder, sing that we live. So last year sometime, Larry Underwood commented to me how much he appreciates an ability to hold up science and spirituality together as if they were two sides of one coin. Or maybe they're like a Möbius strip. How many of you are familiar with the Möbius strip? Yeah, a few of you. And maybe I can actually draw a line all the way around the strip. And the thing about the Möbius strip is that as you go around, you go from one side to the other until you come back to the beginning. So round and round you go, from one side to the other, never stopping. It's like a three-dimensional infinity sign. And coincidentally enough, last Sunday when I was talking with my mother on the phone, without her knowing that I had preached on the natural wonder and awe arising out of children's holy uselessness, what we usually call play, she mentioned that when she first used the word infinity in my presence and explained it to me, I became utterly fascinated with the concept that something might be beyond the numerical limits of time, space, or quantity. Unknowable, ineffable. What Larry and I both understand is that science and spirituality are not separate realms of human understanding. They inform and play into each other. Holy uselessness. The living tradition of our Unitarian Universalist faith recognizes this. As UU's, we draw upon myriad sources for inspiration. One of those sources, the fifth one, humanist teachings, which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science, and warn us against the idolatries of the mind and spirit, balances the first source, a focus of our worship last week, that recognizes the value of direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces that create and uphold life. Science and spirituality. Ellen has given us a reflection on black holes from a scientific perspective, but I also was finding spirituality in there. The Stephen Jay Gould reading that she chose alludes to the reality that there is plenty of science that we must take on faith because it is not directly observable. We must, in fact, infer, hypothesize, and test our assumptions. It is not all knowable, however. Mystery hidden in mystery, back through all time, mystery rising from rocks in the storm and the sea, is how Robert Weston puts it poetically. Out of the stars in their flight, out of the dust of eternity, here have we come. In news articles from this past spring, when the news was filled with reportage about the first ever photograph of the black hole, were what essayist and journalist Ed Simon calls the gloss of the unavoidable sacred in the media coverage about the discovery. The project was called a gloriously esoteric goal in the New York Times Magazine. And the phenomenon was variously described as an unknown realm that can only be imagined, an almost featureless nothingness, or quoting the 17th century poet John Milton's description of hell as no light, but rather darkness visible. And take, for example, the name from the Hawaiian, which I can't repeat because I only just heard it this morning. But wow. Simon writes, in that space between rational apprehension and infinity is an ether known as wonder. No doubt, the physics of the black hole are circumscribed by mathematics, but our supplications to it speak a different language, what the Romantics called sublimity. 18th century Irish philosopher Edmund Burke wrote that a definition may be exact and yet go but a little way towards informing us the nature of the thing defined. Up until the black hole photograph was released to the public, we could only try to imagine how it might appear in our human sight or model it, as Ellen showed in one of those photographs. What had you imagined in your mind's eye? What did you experience when you saw the photograph last April? Or today, if somehow you missed the news? Was it like seeing other startling, perspective-changing images, such as that first photograph of the Earth from space 51 years ago? Or how the Earth is an inconsequential speck barely visible from the edge of the solar system? Did you have a short uptake of breath? Did your heart stop ever so briefly, catching on the edge of a mystery being revealed? What meaning have you attached to this discovery? There's a paradox, I think, inherent in these black holes for all of the scientific theory involved. The Einsteins, and I liked how Ellen snuck in there, both of them, because they're both important, right? Let's give women their due. The Einsteins' general theory of relativity predicts places where all of the laws of logic and physics completely break down, where space and time themselves cease to have any meaning. Ed Simon writes that the photo from the Event Horizon Telescope is of the place where physics falls apart, where logic shall have no dominion, where seemingly unassailable kingdoms of time and space are finally conquered, where mathematics fails and something else must take hold. That something else is our ever so human need to find meaning in those situations. For all of our rationality, it is through awe-inspiring direct experience that our spirits are renewed. Spiritual and religious experiences require meaning-making of that ether known as wonder. The title of Ed Simon's article in Rewire on April 12th was "God Need Not Be Real, But the Black Hole Photo Is." And it's worth quoting extensively from it. He wrote, "There are, it must be said, certain theological implications to that celestial wonderment. I speak not of some claim that the black hole confirms any literal or conventional belief in a deity. God need not be real for divinity to be an applicable concept, for it's good enough that the black hole is real. For me," he says, "the photograph both confirmed and exceeded expectations. In many ways, the picture appeared as I sort of assumed it would, but when I actually viewed the image, it shattered my sense of what I was looking at, of what's possible, of what lay at the center of distant galaxies. Such enormity, the awesome, sacred enchantment of such a thing that even in our ostensibly secular age, we must mine the metaphors of faith to generate something equivalent with our feelings before the altar of the singularity. Whether paradise or perdition lies behind that black boundary of the dead star, I don't know, nor if it's something else entirely. A black hole is equivalent with mystery. A black hole is equivalent with wonder. A reminder that there are things in heaven and earth that are beyond our comprehension and which we cannot describe except in the most rarefied calculations." God need not be real for divinity to be a concept applied to the aspects of life before which we kneel down in marvel and astonishment. The universe is in which we exist extends beyond time, space, and quantity. It reaches into infinity to an unknowable, indescribable beyond. Simon concludes his dispatch thus: our black hole, a reminder that there are some beautiful things beyond our grasp, some holy things beyond our vision, the closest we'll ever come to a photograph of God. There is something utterly amazing about the infinite, one of the names for God that resonates with me. How truly remarkable that we have been able to see this glimpse of the universe's glory. May we be always aware that light and dark are necessary for insight. May we remember our place in this infinite universe, that we are made of star stuff and fully share in the transcending mystery and wonder of the Spirit. In a world without end, may it be so.